coming at you live from Toronto, Canada, not too long ago. It's Cartoon Night in Canada.
Hey, what you watching?
Got a problem with cartoon?
Night in Canada, a nostalgic podcast where we dig through the animated past to find what cartoons made here in Canada are worth remembering. I'm your co-host Chris Lucy Antonio.
And I'm your co-host Sylvie Kittles.
And it's 2024.
Happy New Year!
Happy New Year. We survived 2023. The horizon is before us, and let me ask Sylvie. What's the plan?
Have a plan?
Don't people usually make New Year's resolutions? I mean, I didn't, but usually people do.
I don't know. I've got like 4 Rent Panda tabs open.
All right, that's
that I don't like, but I don't like any of them.
Let's start. You know, it's only the second we are recording of this year, January 2nd. So there's plenty of time to make up our minds about what we want to do with this year, right?
Sure.
Sure, yeah. But in terms of the podcast, we said it last year. We took some time to set some goals. We did not meet any of them.
We achieved none of them.
We probably even forgot some. But I don't know. Let's each just throw something out. Like, what do we want to do with this show moving forward?
I mean, I'd like to do, like other things. I'd like to have more guests.
Yes.
Like, more, I'd like to, link up with some of the people we've reached out to in the past. That'd be fun.
It's a thorny bridge we'll have to cross eventually about that drop connection, but, you know.
Yep.
Live and learn.
And, maybe this year, maybe I'll get a new chair.
Just putting it back on the board for this year. Like, not even erasing the text, just, like, going up to the 2023 on the whiteboard, wiping off the 3, putting the 4, like, everything's the same.
It's the exact same goals, the same plans. It's like, well, maybe this year we'll actually do them.
I feel like that's my experience with resolutions, New Year's resolutions, for the past, I don't know, 7 years?
Yeah.
It's hard. It's hard to follow through, but I think you hit the nail on the head. I'd like to have more guests. I would like to expand our content. I'm calling it content. This is a podcast, so I think that's okay.
Yeah, we're not making art here.
No. The furthest thing from art. Anti-art, really. I would like to diversify what we're putting out there. Interviews, maybe some like more researched episodes of like retrospectives or something along that nature, taking this more seriously than just 2 buddies talking shit about cartoons. Although it will still be that.
I'm just gonna say, if you try to make it not that, I'm out.
No, the writing's on the walls. I know what this is. I know what I'm doing.
Yeah.
But
we don't know what we're doing.
Exactly. Yeah. There you go. 2024. We'll know what we're doing. That's the only resolution. Can we commit to that?
Okay, I don't know if you can promise
yeah,
that.
Yeah, I didn't think so either. Well,
We can try.
Well, it's a new year, and let's start off by really, when I said diversify our output and change things up a bit, really, really shake the very tenets of Cartoon Night in Canada. Let's take one of our longest running things, our most beloved running joke, you would say.
That's the technically Canadian one, right?
Yeah, yeah. Let's just throw that in the garbage.
Yeah, we're not even trying today.
Let's bend over backwards to try and justify talking about the thing we want to talk about today. Let's really,
well, because in this case, is a character.
Herta is a vibe.
We've got maybe, like, four Canadian actors in the cast.
Four Canadian actors in the cast, set in Canada, but beyond that, I don't think
this is the most Canadian, animated Canadian thing I think we've talked about so far.
It's not even Canadian.
It's not even Canadian, but it feels the most because, I mean, maybe it was because it was based off a graphic novel written by someone from Canada.
Yeah, but we're starting off the year by really stretching the rules. Just to show you, rules don't fucking matter in 2024. It's a prison yard out here now. Anything goes.
Oh, God. Oh, God.
Yeah, strap in. On this, the final installment of Canadubcember, fashionably late. Great start to 2024, by the way.
Hey, it's what we do.
This is perfect. I'm loving this.
This is just the funniest way we could open the year.
In multiple ways, because we're taking a look at Scott Pilgrim Takes Off, the long-awaited continuation of the Scott Pilgrim story. Long-awaited for this podcaster. I don't know about you.
I was stoked.
There we go. I remember when this was announced back the talks around it was starting like 2018, but when they first made that announcement in March, I think, of 2023, that the show had been greenlit and all the cast was returning, I apologize to everybody I know. It's like, as soon as this comes out, I'm sorry for the person I'm gonna be.
It was the big, like, okay, everyone unfollow me right now. This is the only thing I'm going to talk about.
It was one of those things, and I bored many coworkers with, like, how much I was enjoying this series. Spoilers. Anyway, the show was developed by friend to all forms of animation, Netflix. I don't know, 2024, they might turn over a new leaf, right? Right?
That's absolutely what they're gonna do. They will have seen the error in their ways.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And you can expect a season two of this show in the near future.
I don't want a season two.
I don't either. We'll get into that. But as well as with Netflix, it was developed by series creator Brian Lee O'Malley and Ben David Grabinski, and based off the graphic novels published, written, and drawn and published by Brian Lee O'Malley between 2004 and 2010. The series debuted as one large chunk of 8 episodes on November 17th, 2023. Go back.
Netflix just truly hates people talking about their shows.
Go back 20 seconds ago where I said, you know, Netflix, friend of animated series and shows and animation, just throw it on the network and there it is.
Yep.
Grim times. But here's the real joke of this episode today. This series was a co-production between California-based Mark Platt Productions, UK production house Complete Fiction, Faust AV, which I cannot find any geographic information on, legendary Japanese animation house Science Saru, and California-based Universal Content Productions.
Hey, Chris.
Yeah.
Something's missing here.
I'm aware. I'm aware. You know, when we originally set out the parameters of technically Canadian, it was mostly because there was plenty of shows we wanted to talk about and highlight the fact that our nation's involvement in their production is not usually talked about.
Yeah, that's true.
Today, we are committing Stolen Valor by pushing Scott Pilgrim Takes Off as technically Canadian.
It's technically Canadian! Toronto is a character in this show. Change my mind.
It is sometimes Canadian, whatever that means, can be a vibe. You know?
Uh-huh.
Just to think back to those disturbingly nationalist beer commercials.
God, the fucking Molson Canadian ones.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I think we've talked about it on this podcast before.
Yeah.
One of the most bizarre pieces in our national mosaic is that fucking Molson Canadian beer commercial.
Where it was just, like, this one guy harping on how great Canada is. And also, please buy our beer.
And we, as Canadians, collectively...
Ate that shit up,
yes.
I had a high school teacher who literally pulled that ad to use as, like, a sample for learning rhetorical devices.
Really? Okay, you know what? I remember this, because I think we brought this up before, and I'm going to ask you the same question. Like, oh, not for civics or social studies?
Nope. English. It was like, that's... and the funniest thing was that it was the Molson Canadian I Am Canadian commercial, and like one of Julius Caesar's speeches from Shakespeare.
On the same level,
mm-hmm.
of prestige.
Yeah, just these are equally good uses of the English language.
You know, the bard, some advertising executive, modern classics. Yeah, this show is not fucking Canadian.
It is now.
But try and stop us. Yeah,
this
try and
stop
us.
This is ours now.
The series was directed by Abel Gongora, who is a science Saru stalwart. His storyboarding work, digital animation, direction across multiple of their fantastic productions. I love the studio, by the way. I watch all their shit.
Oh, yeah. Science Saru makes just gorgeous shit.
Mm-hmm.
No, I was just going to say they're basically famous for, like, combining very traditional hand-drawing animation styles and then just doing the most buck-wild shit digitally with those traditional, as their baseline.
Yeah, it's all because of Masaaki Yuasa, the founder of Science Saru and the chief animator and director affiliated with it until he stepped down. It's like, it was a company molded after his sensibilities.
Mm-hmm. Like, I know a lot of weebs really poo-poo on Space Dandy, and they're all cowards.
Yeah, shut up.
Shut up, you're wrong.
Space Dandy is, look, yes, it doesn't take itself seriously. It's a joke, and that's fine. Like, it can be like that. It's okay. It doesn't have...
It's a gorgeous show. Granted, that was, like a Bones mainstay, but, like, Science Saru was also very heavily involved in that production.
Yeah, USA directed one of the episodes, and you can tell because his unique aesthetic is all over it.
Oh, yeah.
And for the episode today, we took a look at the premiere episode, Scott Pilgrim's Precious Little Life, directed and storyboarded by Abel Gongora and written by series creator O'Malley and Grabinski. Original air dates? Well, November 17th, 2023, with the rest of them. It really bugs me. It really bugs me.
Because it's so stupid.
I hate that it's selective, too. It's not all of their series, it's just certain ones where they are giving it a proper week-by-week rollout.
Have they done anything with a week-by-week?
I
didn't know that.
The Squid Game reality show.
That doesn't count.
Yeah, but they actually wanted people to talk about that one and make it a social media phenomenon, so they didn't give it all to you at once.
Which is so absurd, because that implies that they do know that dropping an entire show all at once makes people not talk about it for as long. Like, so they are capable of doing it right, and they just actively choose not to.
Data is there. Like, we know this. Like, we know they have the streaming numbers and how they drop off, as well as like social media posts about it and how they drop off after, the first 2 weeks of it just all being available, and the binge watching model is still in play. Like,
Netflix is run by fucking morons. Change
always
my
has been,
mind.
always will be. Like, no, there's no changing your mind. You're right.
I'm just objectively correct.
You can pack up that table and that sign in front of the college. No one's gonna argue with you. Put the mug down.
Can't.
God, another unfortunately technically Canadian thing. That guy. Yeah.
We'll
Sorry.
get to, we'll talk about him when we get to fucking Arthur.
Wait, did we talk about him on the Sagwa episode?
Yes, we did. We mentioned him.
Damn it, we shouldn't have. Why would we sully the podcast with that?
I wasn't gonna. You brought him up.
Was that me?
Yeah.
Was it? I'm sorry. I'm very, very sorry. Scott Pilgrim.
Scott Pilgrim.
So what is this? Like, what are we dealing with here?
Well, so we're working off of basically a readaptation of the comic book series.
More faithful one than the movies. Movie.
Yeah. Which then at the by the end of the first episode decides to do something completely different.
Because this series is 2 months old, and as we have just laid out, most of the people who are going to watch it have watched it. I think we can wade into spoiler territory. I think it's
Absolutely.
fine.
But just in case, if you haven't seen Scott Pilgrim Takes Off, spoilers for the entire fucking series.
Yeah, we want to talk about it. The main spoiler is that the series title is a pun.
Is it?
Scott Pilgrim Takes Off. He's fucking gone for most of this series.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I guess, yeah, take off, eh?
Yeah, he's at the end of this episode, which faithfully adapts the like first 20 minutes of the movie as well as the first graphic novel. We lead to the same place in the narrative
Yeah,
of
the battle with the first of Ramona's seven evil exes.
the great Matthew Patel, who really stands out in this series. Another great
Oh, we'll
thing.
get to him.
Another great thing that this show does is like really fills out these characters and gives them so much more, because this is a completely different story. Because at the end of this episode, Scott Pilgrim, quote unquote, dies.
He loses. So
It's.
we get like an AU of what happens if an evil ex wins and what that means. And so the rest of the series is kind of dealing with the fallout of that, both in terms of like how the evil exes cope with the realization that beating Ramona's potential new partner does not mean you get to date Ramona. And then Ramona having to kind of like grapple with her own shitty past.
As well as the absurdity and honestly childishness of the concept itself of this League of Super Evil Exes, and because this is all strained through Scott Pilgrim's like idealized reality, where if I'm the strongest and beat up all the exes, I get the girl.
Yeah.
But in this case, with him absent from the story, we are left with this strange realization that this entire idea is stupid. This reality is fundamentally broken, and we have to be adults about this.
And so kind of what it ends up being is like Ramona and Scott independently having to have like confrontations about what they want out of a relationship together.
Journeys of self-discovery, which weirdly meld together and don't, because the thrust of the series, we are mostly following Ramona Flowers, and it's kind of like, does she act like does this person actually want Scott Pilgrim back? Like, that's hanging over this entire series, which is fascinating.
Like she's obsessively looking for Scott, but like everyone kind of every draws like makes it very clear like you went on one date with the guy,
Yeah.
maybe one and a half.
Yeah,
Why
for.
are you why are you doing this? And like are you doing this out of some like sense of guilt because he died fighting one of your exes? Or
Yeah.
like are you actually interested in him?
What I really like about this series, and well, I'm a fan of the graphic novel series. We both love the movie, like that. We've established that. But what I like about it and what it represents is the creator of this thing, what Scott Pilgrim has come to represent, coming back with a mature attitude and looking at his original creation and thinking like, well, that doesn't really fly anymore. I don't feel this way about these things. And wanting to do something new with it that is still faithful to the spirit of the original, but coming from a more developed and honestly interesting perspective. Like, I think this series is much more interesting, much more intriguing. Like, there's so much more to talk about with it than the movie itself. I still love the movie. It's one of my favorite of all time. But this series kind of gives me something to chew.
Scott Pilgrim versus the World is like a phenomenal comedy. This is like a phenomenal dramedy.
It's taking the concept and working with it from like the fresh eyes of, 13 years or 20 years away from the comic. It's really refreshing to see somebody want to return to their original creation and think like, you know what, I was young, I a little immature. Scott Pilgrim was a self-insert to a degree, and I'm kind of embarrassed by that. So let me just
Yeah,
clean it up here and there.
to come back to a self-insert and reflect on how much you have grown since then, and kind of reflect on how perceptions of that self-insert should have changed, how your perception of yourself, of your younger self, has changed. Because that's, I mean, and again, like getting later into the series, Scott meets two older versions of himself, so it literally is like an older version of himself reflecting on his youth. But then in the same breath, like having that childish self-insert look at who he might become and reflect on if he wants to be that person.
And it's able to pull this all off without sacrificing the honestly like corny spirit of Scott Pilgrim. Like he's still a geek. This series is washed with references to anime and video games. It is the lifeblood of Scott Pilgrim. And it's not saying like he can't be that way, but he still has to grow up. I'm just My favorite line in this first episode, there's so many great ones, is because I love the writing of Scott Pilgrim, but my favorite line from this episode comes from Matthew Patel, and it just feels like a big realization of how stupid this entire concept is. When, because it's after Gideon Graves sends for Matthew Patel, the first evil ex, to send him after Scott Pilgrim, and Matthew Patel says, like, first, I must thank you, Gideon Graves, for starting this League of Evil Exes. It's such a high concept. It's just taking the piss out of the entire idea. It's like, yeah, we know, like, in 2023, this idea is kind of silly, but we're gonna run with it until it doesn't work.
Think my favorite part is at the party where Scott first meets Ramona in real life, and his idea of a pickup line is, you know, Sonic the Hedgehog. And then he tells the story about how there were two different Sonic the Hedgehog cartoons at the same time, both starring Jaleel White. And what got me was because I'm pretty sure I have had this exact conversation with someone.
So,
I was like, ouch. Oh no, I've been
no,
attacked.
what got me is when that line was posted by somebody on Twitter, I kept seeing posts from like women and people who identify as women on Twitter saying, like, yeah, that worked on me. Sometimes the bar is that low.
But also, see, the thing was that also Ramona saying I watched mostly Columbo reruns, that would also get me, is the thing.
Sometimes it's like two people can connect over nothing, literally nothing.
Just you connect over the fact that, oh, we're both pathetic losers.
I mean, Scott Pilgrim is like the lost in your 20s fiction. Like it is something to show to someone in their like mid-20s and like, listen, you have time to work it out.
Yeah, you can grow from this.
Like, and also you might think that you have it figured out and you're coasting, but honestly, some perspective is needed.
God, the specific reference, I know this is the one that like was immediately caught when this show came out, was the fact that the opening sequence is heavily inspired by the Beck Mongolian Chop Squad opening.
Blatantly, like, yeah, it is.
Yeah, like they just pull shots from that opening, which is so great. It was so lovely watching people go, wait.
It's an interesting pull too, because like there is traces of that series in the graphic novel, but it's like it's excised from the movie. But in like this, what Scott Pilgrim Takes Off is like an actualization of Brian Lee O'Malley's kind of like interest in this character. It's like, and so like, yeah, throw in whatever you want. I love that all the episodes have their title cards based around different 8-bit video games. I love the amount of I love amount of diversions that it takes from the movie itself, because like this is visually, aesthetically, so much less unhinged and radical than Wright's vision. It's like less concerned with filling the screen with accents and flashy, cheeky references to video game stuff. It's more like centered, but even because of that, it's like it still feels like its own thing.
Yeah. And it's weird how like the animated version is somehow more grounded than the live action one, but still manages to be its own special brand of unhinged, because I don't think you can make a Scott Pilgrim anything that isn't slightly
No,
unhinged.
because it's born out of this, like Brian Lee O'Malley's like taking from his inspiration and like a pastiche of all this type of pop culture that he was obsessed with at the time. And he just creates the scion of these obsessions, which is Scott Pilgrim. Like he is he, that's what that character is. I like how you said it's like, even for an animated version, it's a lot less unhinged, but there are moments when it's willing to do what Edgar Wright does and kind of break the confines of the narrative or the aesthetic itself just for an accent, just for emphasis.
Yeah, just do a bit. Just do a bit real
Do you
quick.
remember when in the party scene when Scott Pilgrim sees Ramona Flowers?
Yeah, and it does sort of like this dreamy
Yeah,
breakaway.
it she does a turn and her animation style changes completely, and I think this is an actual reference because it's exactly where my mind went. It's like Ramona Flowers was drawn using one of those how to draw manga books you would get at the Scholastic Book Fair. Because she's so off model from like the Science Saru style as well as Brian Lee O'Malley's graphic style, but it feels like a such a specific reference because that's what Scott Pilgrim does.
I just pulled the clip.
You see
Yeah,
what I
you're
mean? Yeah.
right. I see what you mean. And then it cuts back, well, especially because like her eyes get really big in shoujo
Yeah.
manga-y. And then the next cut, she goes back to just the flat black eye that
But
everyone
we're
has.
dealing with Science Saru, who know how to do the quote unquote anime style. And there's just a little bit of jank with the way that they draw Ramona Flowers there. Like
Just ever so much.
say viewed through the eyes of Scott Pilgrim, who would absolutely buy one of those books and never use it.
I didn't even buy them. I had a friend who bought them, and I just borrowed
How far did
one.
you get? What's your manga career like now?
Well, I'm here, aren't I?
Okay, sure. How many projects have you had appear in Shonen Jump?
Wouldn't you like to know, Weather Boy?
No. There is so much we could talk about with this series. Let's just talk a little bit right now. Why is this Canadian?
Because Toronto,
That's my
baby.
city, dude.
That's not my city.
That's my city,
But I've been there.
dude. I I'm disgusted with myself whenever I watch the 2010 Scott Pilgrim, and just like how wistful I get looking at, like, oh, I know where that is. I know where that is. I'm one of those, and it's disgusted me.
The only thing, I mean, obviously Casa Loma. That's the only one I know.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a joke in that movie, is how often Casa Loma is used for movies. Have you ever been there?
Once. I haven't been inside. I walked by it when, like, the gates were open for some reason and just kind of, like, took a picture and left.
I went as a kid, and I went again recently with friends, just for funsies. And they have, like, I think the old, stable. They have, like, a room upstairs that's basically dedicated to every movie that's been filmed at Casa Loma.
Nice. Yeah,
and
do
there
it.
There is a Scott Pilgrim versus the World chunk.
As there should be.
Yeah. Well, because that's the only time where Casa Loma plays Casa Loma.
It's why I have such admiration for the Scott Pilgrim film. It's like, yeah, Toronto is Toronto, and on a, like, big universal movie directed by a Brit. But hey, I'll take it.
Don't worry about it. But yeah, and then in this case, still, it's so clear that they did either, like, I don't know if they were pulling, like, photographic reference, or, like, if some of the background animators went to Toronto to find, like, to scout locations, because absolutely every background in this show is definitely, like, a one-to-one a real place in Toronto.
It's pretty faithful, I will say. We were talking before we went on mic, but, like, the house party at Julie's, like, I've been to that house, I have been to that party, I have absolutely had that same experience.
Yeah, like, they're very, like, all the houses that, that are rented here, like, Wallace's basement apartment, Julie, the house that Julie's renting, the house that Ramona is renting, like, all of these, definitely, like, wartime constructions that
yeah.
are really popular in Southern Ontario.
That's Toronto.
Hell, Northern Ontario, too. Like, I've definitely seen these houses outside of Toronto, too, but,
mm-hmm.
like, they're, especially for, like, 20-somethings, like, this is the only kind of place you can afford.
Yeah.
It's like you and probably three other friends minimum who are renting out.
Too real. Stop. Please stop.
But it's like, it's this kind of, like, you're never gonna own a house, so you just rent one, and this is the only era of houses you can afford. This show is Canadian because Toronto, baby.
Yeah, Brian Lee O'Malley's involved, it's set in Toronto, and there are, like, three or four Canadians on the cast. We'll take it.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's that easy.
We have to, and also, we were called out. Someone correctly guessed that we were going to talk about this show.
I was, like, this close. You can't see my fingers, but I was this close to scrapping the episode. It's like, no! Dare
out of
you.
Spite. Like,
I am not predictable.
Which is amazing. Like, imagine getting, being so predictable that, like, a show that isn't even Canadian, and someone was like, no, they're gonna do it.
That's a joke, right? That's what you're leading up to? It's like, did we telegraph it that much? Like, yeah, we probably did.
I think we might have mentioned, like, at the beginning of Canada December, I might have said something like, oh, we're gearing up to something special.
Maybe, yeah. Either way, we're here, we're loving it, because this show absolutely rips.
This show is fucking gorgeous!
Let's talk a bit about the look of it, because what I love about this series is that it's incredibly faithful to Brian Lee O'Malley's, like, character designs, but
mm-hmm.
I don't know what it is, but Science Saru's, like, house style, if we want to keep using that term, it works so perfectly with it.
They mesh really well.
Yes, it's...
I mean, yeah.
It's a beautiful fusion
I mean,
of the two styles.
Especially for, like, in terms of making these character designs to make them move the way they do.
Mm-hmm.
It's because they're very, blocky, like, I don't know if blocky's fully the word for them, but they're like,
I see what you mean.
The characters are kind of just like in a single piece.
Yes, yeah.
And so to figure out how these bodies would function in a living space is really interesting. I think they nailed it.
I totally agree. And I like how this episode, how these episodes were laid out. Like, every episode is directed and most of the time storyboarded by the same director, usually someone in-house at Science Saru. And so every episode kind of gets its like a unique feel attached to it.
Yeah, with the exception of the cold open is always the same.
Yes, it's always the same. Yeah, there's...
Can I just say, poor Ramona... I just want to call out Ramona for fucking up her hair. Because, oh my god, girl, your hair is so fried!
Every episode, the bleach goes on and the new color goes over it, and this is the unreality of Edgar Wright's world. It's like, no, we can't logically go through that. As someone who has bleached and dyed their hair, it's never the same.
Ramona, I'm so scared for your hair.
I think you texted me once when you're like a couple episodes in, and then it's like her hair must just be goop.
Yeah, like it's got to be melting at this point.
Scott Pilgrim will take it though.
He doesn't have another choice.
No, they are destined to be together in all realities. Yeah, just we didn't get too much of it because I like how they don't really get into the meat of the Scott Pilgrim series, which is like the fight scenes. They are spectacular. But in this one, we just get a bit of a taste of it, and the animation is breathtaking. It is like,
yeah,
so full of fury and, oh God, what am I trying to say here? Tongue tie right now. I'm just so in awe of it.
Passion? It's, yeah, like, this is a great taste of, this is a foretaste of the feast to come, is this fight scene, because the fight scenes get insane.
It's the...
As the series progresses.
It's like the bulk of most of the episodes is a, like it's 8-minute fight scene. I mean, the majority of the second episode is just an extended fight scene between Matthew Patel and Gideon Graves, and it's phenomenal.
Yeah.
Just the
I love getting to like expand on everyone's powers, because like for the evil exes, we usually get us in the movie, we only got a single fight scene from each of them, and then they're gone, they're defeated.
Yeah, and we
whereas, because like Matthew Patel has like 4 throughout the series,
the big one is in the next episode, skyscraper sprawling fight between the two.
Yeah, but he's also present for the finale.
Mm-hmm, yeah. Yeah, we get more of their characters, their powers, like, and because the whole point of the series is to fill them out more from like the 2010 movie, give them more backstory, give them great, like, more invested characters. Probably why so many of the cast were willing to come back. It's like, it's not just a walk-on for one episode and then you're dead. No. You are characters.
Yeah, hey, remember that character you played like 13 years ago? We're gonna flesh them out and give you some more to chew on with them.
For what, like, in the context of the film, is like, yeah, that's just an extended cameo because you come in for this scene and you're gone.
With the exception of the twins. I don't...
Yeah, yeah.
They kind of get more to do, but, not substantially more.
Yeah. But yeah, you just get a taste of what the fight scenes can be like with Gongora's direction of this, like, of Patel and Pilgrim facing off. And now that I think about it, considering where this episode ends off, why would Netflix not want to do a week-by-week release schedule?
Right? Like, you're ending on a cliffhanger!
A massive one. Because up till now, they've kept it pretty close to chest. People are just assuming that this was going to be an adaptation of the graphic novels. Like a faithful one.
Yeah. I think that's what everyone was expecting. And then
it's like we're doing the story of Scott Pilgrim.
And it's like, oh, they're doing something different here.
Hmm. I wonder what happened. Oh, it's already playing. I had autoplay on. Okay. Oh, okay. Well, okay. Here we go.
Yeah. Okay. We're done. Okay. Let's find out.
All that sense of suspense and anticipation just gone. Good job, Netflix.
It also, like, this series ends on such a satisfying place that it's like, I know they kind of set it up that it could have a second season with Gideon and Julie just, like, really coming into their own as villains.
A power couple, yeah.
I don't want that.
No.
I'm satisfied with the knowledge that they will just go be a villainous power couple and just wreak havoc across Toronto, because that's what they deserve.
Yeah, I don't need more adventures with Scott Pilgrim. Like, he reached the end point of his... Yeah, like, all the evil exes, they had their moment of character development. Ramona had her moment of character development. Like, I'm good. And the real tragic thing is when the creators were asked about, like, so, can we expect a season two? They gave the, you know, usual stock answer of, like, well, you know, we maybe have some ideas, but we're pretty satisfied with how it ended. And also, we are looking at the landscape of animated products on the streaming services, like, in that in this whole streaming bubble, and we're not optimistic.
Yeah, and they're correct.
Because what was the adult animated show that Netflix had that got greenlit for a second season, had most of the animation done, and they canceled it?
Fuck, I don't remember. Was that Tuki and Birdo?
No, it wasn't Tuki. Tuka
and Birdie.
Yes, Tuka and Birdie. It wasn't that one. It was oh man, this is gonna bug me now.
Sorry to change the subject. While you're thinking about that, I just want to call out the background shot of the Inconvenience Store, where they've got advertisements for Lotto Mix and 946.
Oh, it's so good.
Yeah, there's also in the window a sign just advertising Double Double.
Yes, like, just a great thing about this series, and, like, pulled from both O'Malley and Wright's sensibilities as comedy writers, is, like, just fill the screen with very subtle little jokes. Like, did you clock the brand of tea that Ramona was drinking?
Oh, gosh, no, I didn't. I might have when I watched it. And I don't remember now.
She is serving up hot bags of Sweepy Time.
Oh!
Like, what a fun little joke.
Now, is that specifically the Sweepy Time with the Whittle Bale on the box?
Yeah, that's exactly what they're referencing. That series was Inside Excellent. Job, by the way.
Okay.
That show was Inside Job. That was the one that had the unfortunate ending to it, where... They gave him the world and then just took it all away from them right under their feet.
There was also, because at the end of the fight, when Scott Pilgrim loses, he turns into two loonies and I think a quarter.
I think it's a quarter, yeah.
Well, and then episode two, part of it is his funeral. And I was watching this with a friend of mine, and both of us, through the entire funeral scene... We were just like, give me that close up of the inside of the casket. Give me the close up of the inside of the casket.
The coins on the pillow, please.
We were not disappointed.
Yeah.
I need it.
It's
like I could not pay attention to the Envy Adams scene at all because I was just staring at that casket. Where's my inside shot?
Sometimes the expected punchline still delivers. Sometimes it could be the most obvious thing in the world and still be funny. If it's written well.
Yeah. It's not about being surprised. It's about the anticipation and the delivery.
Real quick before we get into that cast, just a quick shout out to the music of the series and the weird status of Scott Pilgrim as this, like, transmedia entity, this product. Because Scott Pilgrim Takes Off is like the culmination of all previous forms of adaptation for it, because you have its cast, which we'll get into. You have Edgar Wright's involvement. You have And then for the music, you've got Anna Managuchi, the chiptune artist, who did the soundtrack to the video game in 2010.
Yeah, so, like, that's just such a strange pull. Like, we talked about it sort of being, like, this kind of all-encompassing project where once you've worked on a Scott Pilgrim thing once, you're gonna want to do it again. Yeah.
Like, all versions of Scott Pilgrim kind of inform on each other. It's it's just like a daisy chain of adaptation that, and it's all not necessarily relevant. It's not an MCU. You don't have to watch the other ones to understand and enjoy this one. But
no, everything's just kind of building off of and growing with each other.
Yeah, like, Scott Pilgrim is, it's like a brand. Like, we know what it is, and there's so much to do with it, to the point where you could make this series, which is a complete rewriting of the entire graphic novel series.
And it's still connected.
Yeah, it all worked. It still feels the same. And real quick, I didn't mean to leave his name out, but the music was co-composed by Anna Managuchi and Joseph Trapanese. Great work. I love this sound. I
can't believe you almost ignored Joseph.
I didn't mean to. I really did not mean to. Great work. Love the soundtrack. Love the songs that they write for this series. This skews into musical by the end, by the way.
Literally.
Like, they have multiple songs for a stage adaptation of the Scott Pilgrim series, the movie. The layers of meta-adaptation that happen in this, it makes my head hurt.
Yeah, well, because, like, the Scott Pilgrim, the 2010 Edgar Wright movie, Scott Pilgrim vs. the World, exists in this series.
It's the main focus of multiple episodes.
Yeah. Except it's Edgar Wrong.
Not the best joke, but you know what? It works. But,
I mean, it feels like the kind of joke where, like, they had only one choice.
Yeah, yeah.
It was like when the Muppet writers were looking at A Christmas Carol, they saw the name Fezziwig, and they're like, yeah, yeah.
I do like, though, that Edgar Wrong is voiced by Kevin MacDonald.
Mm-hmm.
Just a luminary of Canadian comedy just popping up here.
Yep, just popping in to say hi.
We won't get into all of it, but this is a deep cast.
Oh, yeah. I mean, we got Simon Pegg and Nick Frost here, man.
Just in a thankless cameo performance as studio security guards, but my god, do they stand out immediately because it's Simon Pegg and Nick Frost in an Edgar Wright production.
It's like, hey, those are my guys. I know those guys.
You got any room for me, mates?
I mean, legally, you have to. You have to make room.
Package deal.
For his mates. Yeah.
Like, you didn't...
They are his carry-ons. When Edgar Wright goes anywhere, he brings Nick and Simon with him.
Yeah, you may not have remembered it, but in the back of the scene in the 2010 Scott Pilgrim movie, when they're at the second cup, you can see Nick Frost and Simon Pegg enjoying a Danish.
Yeah, just hanging out.
Yeah, yeah. It's not true,
God,
by the way.
No. What do they call second cup in this one?
Oh, God.
It's a first cup or something?
Yeah, it's the laziest thing, purposefully lazy.
Yeah.
It's first cup, I think, is the right thing.
I love it.
Yeah.
I miss second cup. That was like, my mom and I's thing when I was little. Was we'd go shopping and we'd go to second cup, yeah. There was one in the mall.
Of course. It's not bad coffee. If you were to twist my arm and say, like, okay, which of the major, quote-unquote, major chains did you want coffee from? It's like, yeah, I'd probably go with second cup.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, the cast. The big selling point for this series.
This is easy. Do you remember the 2010 movie? Did you watch it?
Yes, many times.
You know the cast.
Everybody's back.
Everybody's back.
Everybody loved to be part of Scott Pilgrim once more.
Can't blame them.
No.
It does tragically mean that we get a bunch of people in here who are not voice actors, and it shows.
In a couple places.
Yeah. There are exceptions, like Mae Whitman is Roxy, and she's like a stalwart voice. I think she's more of a voice actor than she is in live action.
Mm-hmm.
I think, well, definitely Michael Cera has, obviously, we've talked about him on this show before. Michael Cera returning, reprising his role as a Scott Pilgrim.
Voice acting is where he cut his teeth. I mean, like, he was a child actor.
And same thing with Allison Pill as Kim Pine. I think we referenced her role in Scott Pilgrim when she came up in this show.
Yes. Love Kim Pine. Love that character.
Yeah. I think she's probably my second favorite character in the movie. My number one is love of my life, Wallace Wells.
Still voiced
by
Kieran Culkin.
I love Wallace's character. Yeah, fucking Kieran Culkin.
We talked about this before we did the episode, and we were just talking about this show because it's good and we like to talk about it.
It's a good show.
The fact that he said yes to this, to like a main role on a Netflix animated show when he's at the height of his power right now.
He could say no to anything right now, and he'd be fine.
He's coming off of the biggest show of last year and the multiple, like, several years before that, Succession. And pretty much he's in the space, like, what's he doing next? Like, where does he go from here? And
the answer is Scott Pilgrim.
Yeah, and good for him. His performance has,
I love...
Yeah.
Yeah, I love his performance. I mean, it's a very straightforward, like, it's a deadpan role.
As Wallace is, yeah.
So he gets to have, yeah. I love that they've brought back a lot of like Wallace's superpower from the comic, just the ability to make straight men gay.
Mm-hmm.
I love that for him. I want nothing but the best for Wallace.
It's really interesting how like a lot of this cast, with a few exceptions, like, could just get back into these characters. Like, he's not in this episode, but Chris Evans as Lucas Lee, like, there's nothing has been
so
lost.
Good.
Nothing has been lost in the 13 years. It's still the same character.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that's, we talked about, like, how much these actors have to have so much love for, like, this project and these characters, because, like, Netflix does not have Marvel money. They don't have Chris Evans, Brie Larson money.
They don't have Kieran Culkin money anymore.
We're just like, yeah, fuck no. And yet, all three of them were like, yeah, I'll come back for this.
Yeah, and I think a lot of it has to do with their experience on the movie itself. I mean, like, Edgar Wright famously treats his cast pretty well, and that's why he works with the same people over and over again.
Yeah, I mean, it shows when a director is able to keep that much cast and crew over time, that mm-hmm. not a single one of them have gone like, oh, I will not work with that asshole again.
To the point where you are pulling from 13 years ago a cult film that didn't really make a huge splash financially, or like really move a lot of...
It did okay.
It didn't really move a lot of needles for like people's career. It's kind of like the fun little thing that they did in the 2010 for... It's like a quirky little footnote in the span of their career. Maybe except for Michael Cera, it's a huge thing for him.
Yeah, like, for Michael Cera, it's Scott Pilgrim and Arrested Development.
I mean, Scott Pilgrim was, like, think about this. Lead actor Michael Cera. That's a 2010 thing.
Yeah.
No disrespect to him. Very talented.
He's a great actor.
Loved you in Scott Pilgrim and this. Like, you get a really weird handle for playing Scott Pilgrim now, even though you are much, much older. Like, you are 35 playing a 22-year-old, and you do a great job.
Yeah. I mean, that's one of the great things about voice acting, is that you don't need to worry about much older people being able to sound like a young idiot.
Exactly, yeah.
Because, I mean, that guy barely hit puberty, as we all know.
Yeah, I mean, he still gets carded at the LCBO.
Guaranteed.
But we were talking a bit about this, about like how game some people were for like to approach this as an animated property. Some of these actors like returning who have much like bigger and expanded roles from the movie, so maybe they were just like that much more enthusiastic. But like two of the big ones that I picked out were Ellen Wong as Knives Chow and Satya Bhabha as Matt Patel. Like Matt Patel is the MVP of this cast.
Like he's both of their tabs right next to each other. I wonder why that is.
Yeah.
God, yeah, Satya Bhabha is like the only one who knows he's in an anime.
And he's playing it up and it works so well. Like he's got a handle of this character and what's to come for him in the later episodes, and he's hamming it up.
Yeah, he is. He's just happy to be here.
And Ellen Wong is Knives Chow. Like her character in the original film, it's like she's kind of a prop in Scott Pilgrim's Story.
Yeah, she's just his high school girlfriend.
I really, really Go on.
Yeah, who's just happy to be here, happy to feel included. And then for the show to be like, well, let's let her grow beyond this incredibly uncomfortable relationship.
I like that the series kind of like makes you sit with that aspect of the character. It's like they, because it's 2023, it's 13 years ago. You know, Scott Pilgrim is not a good character, not a good person, but like we could just, I don't know, age her up a bit. No. Matthew Patel himself.
No, she is 17.
Like, Matthew Patel himself talks to Gideon Graves after he says, like, he's dating a high schooler. He's like, what? Really?
Yeah.
He just...
Yeah, this league of objectively shitty people is like, wow, that's crazy even for us.
The first member of the League of Evil Exes is going like, dude, that's a little fucked up.
Like, yeah, I'm here to murder you and try to steal back a girl I smooched once in middle school, but, like, what the fuck?
Yeah, I like that, one, they didn't just rewrite that or leave it out and actually worked around it. And, two, made, like, again, it's just that refreshing aspect of returning to something that you, like, wrote, you know, now 20 years ago. And looking at it again, it's like, you know, let's really lay things out here. That's not okay, because I don't know if you have you actually read the graphic novel?
I did once years ago.
Because when he's...
I borrowed them from the library.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
When Scott is explaining to his band, like, about how he's dating a 17-year-old, Stephen Stills, played by the great Mark Webber in this, he says, like, huh, is she hot?
Yeah.
And now, with the refreshing eyes of 2023, most of the people in his friend group going, like, you better not hurt that girl. You should break it off. This is kind of weird.
Yeah, like, even Wallace, who, like, doesn't seem to care about anyone or anything.
Specifically Scott Pilgrim.
Is just like, yeah, is just like, Knives Chow is an angel.
Another favorite line of the episode.
Like, just having all of his friends be like, dude, this is really fucked up. If you're gonna date her, you'd better not fucking hurt her. And then when he starts, like, getting all gaga over Ramona, everyone's like, break up with Knives, you weirdo.
Let her down easy, and if you hurt her, God help you.
Yeah, well, especially because, like, his friends barely like him, as it is.
Oh, no, he's hanging on by a thread.
That was, like, my friend who I watched this show with, his favorite part of the opening is that shot from, that's taken from Beck in the diner. Mm-hmm. and how, like, when, like, everyone's just kind of hanging out at the diner having a good time, and then when Scott walks in, everyone's face drops, like, they are instantly miserable.
It's why the series works. It's why the series works the way it is, where he's absent for the majority of it, and everyone is just like, yeah, it's fine.
Yeah, like, his friend group just moves on so quickly to him being gone. The fact that Ramona's the only one who really seems to care about him being gone.
And they're all just really weirded out by that.
Is played for laughs. Yeah, they're like, why the fuck do you care? We're his friends and we don't care. His sister does not care.
Yeah, Stacey Pilgrim, reprised by Anna Kendrick, doesn't give a shit.
But yeah, we didn't talk about Mary Elizabeth Winstead, obviously reprising her role as Ramona Flowers. And I know, this is my weird hang-up, is like, I know that's kind of the joke, is that she has, like, a single flat affect.
She did it in the 2010 movie, yes.
Yep. And then the joke is that her voice does not change at all for older Ramona, when, like, Scott's voice changes so much that it's literally a different actor.
It's fucking Will Forte.
and so, like, she's just, you know, she's in her, like, 40s and still sounds exactly the same. And that's, like, it's a good haha funny joke, but then, like, they fuse old and young Ramona together and they try to have, like, the silly sci-fi, like, voice warble where it's, like, both voices mesh together. But that doesn't work because it's the same voice.
It seems like that's the joke, but it's so, so subtle. It's like, who is that for?
Yeah. It's a bit rough.
Yeah, I mean, not everybody's a voice actor, actress. And, like,
it still works.
Yeah, Mary Elizabeth Winstead is one of our most talented actors currently working. I mean, like, full stop, yeah. I love her, but...
Oh yeah, she is incredible.
Sometimes it doesn't mean you can just get into the booth and be an actor. I have no problem with her performance. It's Ramona Flowers.
Mm-hmm. Like, I think everyone in this cast sounds great.
Yes.
There are definitely, like, a handful of, even if not performances, that maybe, like, a few standout lines where I kind of went, eh.
Yeah, here or there.
Could have done better there. Except for Johnny Simmons as young Neil. He is perfect. Every single line is delivered like he doesn't actually know where the sentence is going to end.
I love that he calls out Crash, the cult Toronto set car sex film, I think he says. And I think it's Kim says, like, I didn't know you were such a cinephile. He was like, what's a cinephile?
It's such a dumb character. I love him.
Literally doesn't realize he did not write a script.
Yeah. I love his stupid-ass, like, Cronenberg for president t-shirt.
I want it. Full call-out. I would wear that. I know it doesn't make sense, because he's Canadian.
No, but that's part of the joke.
God, anything left to say on Scott Pilgrim Takes Off?
I mean, definitely. We could probably sit here for another couple of hours at least, but... For the sake of today, sure, I guess we'll call it a day.
Sure. Good show.
Toronto's an okay city.
Thank you. I'll take it.
I would die if I lived there.
Oh, I'm on the path. This.
Run.
Have you ever seen The Last Black Man in San Francisco?
I have not.
Kind of hard to watch now because, like, the second star of it is Jonathan Majors. But the main actor has a line when he's talking to some people on the tram about San Francisco. And he goes, like, you're not allowed to hate it unless you love it. That's me with Toronto.
Yeah.
Fucking hate this place, dude.
Yeah,
I love
I
it.
I mean, I've definitely had that conversation where, like, I had a classmate once who was, like, born and raised in Toronto, and when I made, like, my offhand comment, like, I physically cannot live in Toronto, I'll die, she was like, I don't believe that. Like, I don't know, you're not allowed to hate on my city.
Have you been there? Person who was born there?
It's like, I think I am.
Listen, it.
Yeah.
Toronto is a beautiful backdrop that can double as so many cities.
Yeah.
But it's at its most beautiful when it's just playing itself.
Agreed.
Yeah. Even in animated form. Even an animated.
Hey, fun fact. My hometown is apparently a great backdrop for playing Toronto.
This is
because
sacrilege. This is disgusting.
No, it's oh god, what was the movie? There was a 2010 movie.
Scott Pilgrim.
No. Citizen Gangster.
What the fuck is
2011. It's a movie set in Toronto in the 1940s, but it was filmed in Sault Ste. Marie because, like, the scouting crew was, like, they walked around downtown Sault Ste. Marie and they were like, oh, nothing's changed here since the 40s. Perfect.
Wow.
So yeah, there's a movie set in Toronto that was not filmed in Toronto.
That's okay. Wow. Even when the setting is explicitly Toronto, Toronto does not play itself. That's
yeah.
Toronto didn't even wasn't even called in by the casting director.
Nope. She didn't get a call back.
Left Toronto on read.
It's like that joke. I know a lot of voice actors have made this joke about trying to get roles, like, in video games and animation, where their agent will tell them, like, oh hey, we're looking for a Laura Bailey sound alike, and it's like it is Laura Bailey doing the audition.
I don't know how you could be so cavalier about that thing, because, like, voice actors all talk to each other.
Yeah, like, they're all friends.
Like, that would get back to her real quick.
Yeah, we're looking for a Laura Bailey sound alike, and most of them would be like, do you want me to text
her? I got her number.
Like, we're friends. But there was also, like, Liam O'Brien's told stories about, like, how he's been sent, like, a voice sample, and it is him. And then he didn't get the role.
Oh, that's... Is pathetic the word? You're not even good enough to be you.
I guess so. Yeah, and so that's Toronto sometimes.
That's Toronto sometimes.
Ooh. You're not even good enough to play yourself.
Put that on the welcome sign. Not even good enough to be Toronto. No, I guess that shall do it for the first episode of 2024.
That Scott Pilgrim takes off.
The most Canadian thing we'll cover this year.
Honestly, by vibes alone, yeah. I mean, unless we do being in this year.
A lot of Saturdays, so maybe. Don't hold me to that. Thank you so much for listening to another episode of Cartoon Night in Canada. If you like what you heard, please consider giving us a like, share, review, and subscribe on your podcatcher of choice, preferably Apple Podcasts, because that helps us reach the widest possible audience. You can find the show on Twitter at Cartoon Night Pod, where we post new episodes every Saturday.
Unless we post them on Sunday.
Hey, maybe that'll be the resolution we can't keep. We'll every Saturday.
Don't say that.
Sorry, I didn't mean to put us on the spot like that. You can find myself on Twitter at CinemaCreep, where I will be going into how I severely identify with Scott Pilgrim and how that's not a problem.
And you can find me at Sylvie Skeletons. I don't know who I identify. No, I do. I'm Young Neil.
We're all Young Neil.
And that's, I'm Young Neil and I'm sorry.
Do you know that?
I have to live with that.
You know that meme image of, men got the wrong idea by identifying with these characters, and it's like Alex DeLarge from Clockwork Orange. It's Travis Bickle from Taxi Driver.
The Fight Club guy.
Yeah, it's Tyler Durden. It's the Joker from Joker. Just slap Scott Pilgrim on there as well. Why not?
Yeah, honestly, he makes that list. He makes that team. That team of, like, people, like, identifying with that character and not realizing that that's a problem.
The worst Suicide Squad ever.
I'd watch it.
I mean, you got Scott Pilgrim be, like, the point on that, right? Because he's got actual powers. I mean, yeah. Yeah, this can work. This can work. We'll pitch it to Netflix. They'll pick it up for a series.
I look forward to your 20-second Photoshop job.
Oh, don't worry. It's going to take less than 20 seconds. You won't have to wait long.
Excellent.
Goodbye.